There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Hour number two on this Monday. Easy to get in touch with us. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106 for a phone call or a text. And you want to chime in on this show or, I mean, 56 hours a week of live local shows coming from right here at the opulent FM Talk 106.5 studios at Airport and 65. You could get shows every day of the week, weekends included, in the evenings, the daytime. So keep that number handy. Also, with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can always leave us a talkback message using that. All right, without further delay, the crowd goes wild. He's my buddy, and he's also a longtime veteran journalist, and read his work over at AL.com. John Sharp joins us now. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
Doing good. By the way, I'll tell y'all what John and I were talking about before we came on. You're working on your bracket here. All I know is, like, I'm just watching NIT stuff because tomorrow night here at the station, it's South and Auburn playing hoops. I mean, that's kind of where my focus is. I hadn't even thought about, I'm sure Dalton has his bracket picked out. I mean, you said you're going to pick Florida?
No. It'd be amazing if they did that 2 years in a row. Nobody's expecting them to run away with it this year, but they are a one seed. So that's fascinating. I don't know. I mean, I'm always, the Big Ten, are they going to put two teams in the Final Four? That hasn't happened in I don't know how long. I'm not seeing it. Michigan, I don't feel for. They're a one seed. And so it comes down to Duke and Arizona. But, I mean, that's what everybody's picking. So you want to have a standout bracket, and I'm not sure. So anybody feel free to chime in. I'm all ears. I don't know who to go with. I want to go with Iowa State. I think they're a really good team, but I went with them in the past.
And why would you go with Iowa State? Why?
Well, that's the biggest rivalry of Iowa Hawkeyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's my team. They are in the tournament. They're a 9 seed. They're not going very far. When you look at these things, you really want to pick a team that is a 4 seed or higher, 5 seed or higher. But this year, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at 3 or higher this year. It's, you know, you really start taking a risk by throwing out an upset special. Of course, there will be those that'll bust everybody's brackets, as there always are every year. But in this era of the NIL, I don't know if we will have those bracket busters like we used to in the past. I mean, I remember one year I picked Virginia to go to the Final Four and they got beat in the first round. I mean, you know, as a one seed, so it's, you know, I don't see that happening this year though. But we'll see. I don't know. It's always a lot of fun because, you know, I never win this thing, by the way. I've come close in various tournaments I've participated in, but I've never won it all. So it'd be fascinating to see if I can try and pull it off again this year.
Pulling for you because I won't even be in. So I'm going to be trying to help you out here. All right. You put this story up last week, end of last week, and I, you know, didn't have a chance to talk with you till today about this. We do these sales tax holidays in Alabama, and I've been, I don't know if I kind of picked on them over the years because I'm like, okay, if we agree that the sales tax is a disincentive to buying your school supplies, a disincentive to buying your severe weather preparedness supplies, then, hey, you told me something, Alabama, that you know it is, so you're going to remove that sales tax so people buy, you know, can buy the things. So your headline here, y'all, this is very interesting too, because I'm always interested when, you know, books and covers don't match and all that. Gun rights group pushes back on Alabama's Second Amendment sales tax holiday. So there's this. Can you tell everybody about the proposal here for the holiday, and then what Bama Carey had to say about this?
So HB 360 is the bill, and it would suspend the state's 4% portion of the sales tax on firearms, ammunition, and a range of hunting supplies like archery equipment. And it would be apply for the last weekend of August, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday before the at the very end of August. So it'd only be a temporary 3-day suspension of the state sales.
So like the school one tax. It's like the school one or the severe weather preparedness one, those kind of things.
That's correct. However, to get the full range of the sales tax break, you would also need approval from every individual city and county that also comprises of the sales tax when you go shopping for whatever it is that you go shopping for. That's, we've had this discussion about the grocery tax, correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, the state has suspended, has removed 2 percentage points of its 4% state sales tax on groceries. However, cities and counties have not done so, so you're only knocking down a certain percentage of the sales tax. You're not removing it completely. So it gets complicated. But that's it in a nutshell. It only apply for a weekend, the state portion of the sales tax. Now, this would allow cities and counties also to consider doing the same thing. And if they did, then you would, you know, have a true sales tax cut for that weekend,
right,
on various hunting equipment. However, the prospects of this bill face uncertainty as we head into the final days of session. It's passed the House. It's currently hung up in the Senate. My understanding, according to the House sponsor of this bill, is that it faces kind of an uphill climb in the Senate because, you know, removing the state portion of the sales tax takes away about $386,000.
Yeah, they need that money, right? So, they got to have that money.
That's correct. That's correct. And so if you get cities and counties participate, then the fiscal note on the bill climbs even higher, well above $500,000. So, yeah, and that's a big chunk of change just for a weekend of suspending the sales tax. So they're having that discussion. Now, other states have done this. Mississippi's done this for quite some time. So it's, we're not treading on novel territory here. There are states that have done these sales tax holidays for firearms and various hunting equipment. Florida they had one last year that was a one-time only thing. I'm not 100% sure. I do not think it's being renewed for this year, but I may be wrong. I'd have to double check on this. But last year they had a suspension that lasted for several months. And so it wasn't just a weekend holiday. It went on for a period of time. So that's kind of where we're at right now with regards to the sales tax holiday on firearms and various hunting equipment.
Yeah, it would, you know, so you said here, yeah, the Bama Carey, gun owners do not want to settle for a temporary tax holiday. We should demand permanent repeal of Alabama state and local sales taxes and excise taxes on firearms, ammunition, suppressors, firearm components, magazines, and other constitutionally protected arms and accessories. In other words, they would like to see something that was 100% here. And so people would think they're on the side of it, but they're against it. And then, like you said, so many people in the state going, oh, well, we need that money. So there's at least two big groups against this.
That's correct. And as you pointed out, you know, accurately, is that, you know, the sides don't always line up here. So you would think, well, let's see here. A group like Bama Carey would probably support this, right? Well, in fact, there's more to the story. And some of the officials over at Bama Carey that I spoke to are not pleased by this. They believe that it should go a step further. And there should be a total repeal of the 4% sales tax on firearms. And they believe what this is represents is an attempt to play politics before an election season. As we all well know, there's a primary coming up on May 19th. So they're saying, well, you know, this is steeped in politics. Now, I did talk to the legislator, the sponsor in the House, Representative Chris Sayles of Greenville, and he told me, he goes, I'm not playing politics. I don't have an opponent. So,
okay, well, that's
but, you know,
facts.
Perhaps others may, yeah. So, I, you know, that's kind of where the sides are on this. There was an interesting little banter going on my ex account over the weekend, in which Representative Russell Bedsole weighed in. I think there was some folks aligned with Bama Carey that were letting him have it over the whole idea of constitutional carry, pistol permits, an issue that we debated quite at length about 2 to 3 years ago. Those have been since removed. The requirement's been removed, at least, to carry a pistol permit in the state of Alabama. But apparently the debate may still go on whether or not we should be spending money, any money, to tax or acquire a permit for the possession of concealed firearms in this state. So, yeah, you wonder if there's more to the story than just the sales tax holiday here. And but that's kind of where, at least on the surface, I received an email from Bama Kerry last week that indicated, hey, call your lawmakers up, tell them to vote no on this Second Amendment sales tax holiday. I was like, well, wait a minute here, that seems odd. I would expect that email from a group like Every Town, mm-hmm. a gun safety rights organization. I wouldn't expect that from a Bama Kerry group. So, yeah, it was an interesting, there's interesting differences here of opinions.
By the way, a little bit of a semi-non sequitur here, just like to throw this in, PSA-wise, I do it from time to time, on the concealed carry permits. Reminder, y'all, if you want to get your concealed carry permit, I talk to people about traveling out of state and other reasons to have one, but if you do it, the 1 in 5 year, that a portion of that money comes back to that county, the sheriff in that county that you got it from. If you do the lifetime one, which is like a default for a lot of us, 100% of that goes to Montgomery and the general fund. None of it comes to your local sheriff's department. So just side note, it's a weird thing the way they, I don't know if they did it on purpose or whatever, but the way the law is, if you do the lifetime concealed carry, none of that comes back to your local sheriff's department. Do the 1 to 5 year, some of that comes back. All right, John's segue here, though, perfect. We're talking about sales tax holidays and sales tax, and you had the write-up here. This is good. I mean, this is, who knew it was going to be so hot, the discussion and the lieutenant governor's race here, but absolutely it is. And in that discussion, you talk a bunch of, and we can get into that, culture war stuff and all that going on. But you right here, Ag Commissioner running for Lieutenant Governor Rick Pate was the first to raise the issue of tax cuts, arguing that Alabama should eliminate the remaining 2 percentage points of the grocery tax. That gets a cheer from me. How'd that compare to his people he's running against?
Well, certainly nobody's. I didn't hear anybody say, "Well, we can't do that because X, Y, and Z." John Wall, who's running for Lieutenant Governor, and he was at this forum last week. He indicated that also, the grocery tax should be a priority for addressing the rising costs that we may be seeing via inflation or whatever have you. I mean, the stubborn inflation we continue to see in this at the grocery store. Yeah, he supported that as well. There was also comments made from another one of the candidates, Mr. Bishop. He'd indicated, yes, support removing. He called it a terrible way to tax people. However, what I didn't hear was, well, if you remove those 2 percentage points of the grocery tax, you're losing revenue out of the state's overall budget. So how would you replace that? Now, you don't often hear that during a candidate's forum unless somebody's pushed to provide that response. But at any rate, that's that came out in that candidate's forum last week. And that's interesting. It certainly illustrates a priority going forward of removing that tax. There's also been discussions of removing the state's income tax as well. But when you start talking about removing taxes, you got to find other ways to provide that revenue or support that, or you got to make cuts on the other end of the budget. I mean, or find other ways to maneuver or massage the budget in any which way you'd like to see it. But getting into that kind of minutia during a candidate's forum sometimes isn't, it doesn't usually happen. But at any rate, the grocery tax seems to be still top of minds of some of the candidates running for statewide office. So that means we'll be discussing that a lot, I think, coming in the campaign season.
I'm not trying to be their campaign director, but I would point out that, the stories from last week or the week before, a record ETF budget, right? So the biggest education trust fund budget, ever for Alabama. So they have managed to do that even with the previous reduction of the state's portion of sales tax on groceries. So I could say, it's not as bad as there's other taxes they're talking about that I understand, but maybe the sky isn't falling on this one. I mean, we've made it to this and we have the reduction, whatever that percentage has been in dollars, and they still have a record ETF budget.
No, you're correct by that. I do think there's some concerns about what might be coming forthcoming in the next year or so, especially with SNAP and the changes of that program. How's that going to impact the state's budgets going forward? So there are some questions, that are looming that probably won't ever go away. I mean, right. Alabama's, they want to run at least what you hear often is, we got to be fiscally minded, fiscally conservative. We got to keep our eyes on the, on the prize as we speak when it comes to the budgets. But and there are concerns when you look in years ahead what might be coming. So those are things too that are out there. But it's campaign season. People want to cut taxes, and so you got to be mindful of that as well.
And as we wrap up here, I know you wrote a bunch about this over at AL.com. We've talked about it on the station. It was leading up to the Oscars, which had no big surprise. It wasn't a political move. I just don't have time to watch those kind of shows. But the Oscars last night, Alabama Solution did not win in its category, did it?
No, it did not. Not surprising. Some of the preview stories I read by some of the national outlets indicated, Alabama Solution was just too difficult of a. It's a tough watch. It really is. It's a tough watch, and so it wasn't really forecasted to win this thing. There was a lot of commentary ahead of the Oscars that, we really don't know who's going to win this category. So it could be anybody's game. So, yeah, I mean that. It wasn't like it was a slam dunk for the movie that wound up winning. It was about, I hadn't seen it. It was about Putin, about Russia. There was no indication that was going to be a slam dunk walk-away winner. So, but at any rate, it's, in the last week, a lot of this attention on the Oscars got this. It was an interesting case because it got some attention in Montgomery. Mm-hmm. There was a bill that was floated. It was part of a legislative hearing on Wednesday, and then it was basically rescinded, and a pilot program emerged all within the past week, right before the Oscars, on prison reform in the state of Alabama. And a lot of it was tied to it was tied to the movie. Representative Larry Stutz had indicated that there was some relationship there. So yeah, it evolved. It was an interesting week when it came to kind of the intersection of Alabama public policy and Hollywood that you don't often see, hardly ever. And so I thought that made for a unique story throughout the week. And it's a story that's not going to go away, obviously. But it's just something that last week, I think, was kind of thrust into the public eye.
John, people want to continue the conversation with you online. Where do they find you there?
Yeah, on the socials at JohnSharp99.
Good stuff. And Michael says to tell you to take Nebraska as a dark horse, but his Gators are going to do it another back-to-back. So
Troy may beat Nebraska, so there's my counter to that.
There you go. All right, John, we'll keep an eye on it. Be good.
Thanks, John.
Coming right back, more Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 128 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. What are we going to do? Tomorrow, St. Patrick's Day as well. Kind of a fun day here around Midday Mobile. Figure out what we're going to do. You got any suggestions for tomorrow's show? I do have something coming up at the end of the week, and I hope it works out. It's pretty dark pencil in on my schedule, but hopefully it does work out. Somebody who's working on the history of the Irish in Mobile, the story of the Irish in the United States. Of course, there'll be documentaries aplenty on TV tonight, tomorrow night, all that kind of stuff. But what about Mobile? What about down here on the coast? Pretty interesting, and hopefully we get that on Friday, which also Friday, by the way, I'm on the road. We'll be at Bryant Bank in Daphne for their pet adoption event. More on that coming up. All right, from the text line here, you see Gary says, Fairfield, Connecticut, watch out. Okay. Oh, by the way, somebody, unnamed texter got me the Facebook video I was talking about. They found it, sent me the link for it. Thank you, thank you, thank you, whoever you are. I appreciate that. And yeah, we'll get this. I'm going to share this on my Facebook page. We'll get this on the, or I can get Leanna to put up on our Facebook page. See what y'all think. This is that, like the brother that comes to where his sister, the lady in the story where the creep was in the parking lot. I want y'all to see that. Tell me what you think.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday, and also a good time to check in with my buddy Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, and take a look at the, I guess, the two biggies news-wise here with precious metals, gold and silver. They're both down some today.
Yes, they are. They were down earlier. Both are showing, you know, regaining some ground. Gold dropped down right to $5,000. Right now it's trading at $5,898, and silver dropped down to 80 even, and it's trading at $81.50. So good buying opportunity. It's I mean, with this war over in Iraq and everything else going on in the markets, it's just kind of going to be like this for a while. But I think it's pretty stable at the $70 to $80 range on silver and $5,000 up on gold. I think that's where it's going to be for a while, but nobody knows for sure, Sean. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, and you've talked about it too as part of a portfolio and a hedge, you know, something to balance it out. But gosh, as a portion of a portfolio, just do the last 365 days, it's been a heck of a portion of a portfolio.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, there's a lot of videos online where you can see, and you know, 5 years ago, how much gold you could have bought for $10,000 versus today. It's you could go from buying 4.5 ounces to less than, you know, basically 1 and 1.8. So almost triple the money if that's what you're looking for. But I never advocate, you know, trying to invest in this stuff. I mean, it can turn into an investment, which it has for a lot of people. But I look at it as a hedge, like we talk about, Sean, to protect your other wealth, your stocks, your bonds, portfolio, your retirement.
You've also taught me over time, and it's not every coin, but certain, you know, gold coins and silver coins, they have the inherent melt value, of course, the precious metal value. But then some become collectibles, so there's a value on top of just the precious metal.
Oh, yeah, and we get free appraisals, too. So if people don't know what their coins are worth, there's no pressure, no obligation to sell. You come in, we'll write you up a free appraisal. You can even use it to take to your insurance company and get what's called a marine rider, so you can make sure your items are insured in case of fire, hurricane damage, theft, any of the normal things that can happen to people in the course of their life.
Yeah, y'all think about that as you put that stuff down for insurance. I mean, it can take forever if you're trying to do it on your own, or you can come to people that know this stuff inside and out at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Tell them how to find you, and online too. I mean, they can go check things out there as well.
Absolutely. You can find us online at mobilebaycoins.com. They can also book appointments for appraisals there. They can give us a call at the shop, do the same thing at 251-725-1590, or just come by at 2204 Govan Street in Midtown.
Good stuff, Professor. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, Sean.
All right, see ya. There goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, 251-343-0106. Let's see here. Well, it's interesting. I don't know what the... So Connor had said, I have an ancestor born in Pensacola in 1715. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Sometimes I forget what I had just said. Oh, you're talking about were they Irish? Maybe the Irish history here? Yeah, we'll hopefully do that on Friday's show, because it's, you know, it's not as well known as, you know, a place like New York, right? Or even out west, and there's so many Irish went to Montana, Wyoming, places like that. But you look at, you know, the history in Pittsburgh or New York or obviously Boston, places like that. But it's a lesser known history down here. Is he really, John Haskett, is he really a professor? No, I call him the professor. Ron, you could sit down with Ron, and this is what I love, and talk about precious metals, but it's not just gold is pretty, or like for example, I call him the professor because of platinum and palladium. I'm like, a year or two ago, maybe 2 years ago, I said, what's the deal with this? Why, you know, the prices move? Why do they move? I want to understand why they move. And it wasn't all just about jewelry. He pointed out to me, platinum and palladium are used in catalytic converters. And when you look at those price moves, often it's driven by expectations of new car builds versus if they think there's going to be fewer prices coming. Another driving force in platinum and palladium beyond just like it's pretty and shiny is he told me all about how they use them in catalytic converters, and that's why the, I don't know if they're still doing it right now. I hope not. The people would go steal the catalytic converters. But he's just a professor on stamps, coin value, which, oh, by the way, and I'm like, y'all need to know this, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you so I'm on record. Found out about, so I'm listening to a podcast that, and it's a fishing-oriented, imagine that, I know, typecast, fishing-oriented podcast, but this guy interviews captains from around the Gulf Coast, and this one guy who had a fascinating life, he works as a shrimper, did some commercial red snapper fishing, did a bunch of different things. He was the guy that hit that Spanish El Cazador, I think, the wreck off Louisiana, found all those coins, and it really is quite a tale of how they found the first. They were shrimping, they're dragging, and I'm guessing from description they're probably fishing Royal Reds, dragging deep, and hit this. Like they pulled up the nets and they had Spanish reals in them, these silver coins, and then how that whole story. Hopefully, I get the some of the players in this on the show. It was a fascinating story. Maybe some of y'all already know about it, but it was absolutely new to me. Kind of the, I guess I remember that shipwreck, but I didn't remember the rest of the story. And obviously, we'll get John Sledge back on to talk shipwrecks. I was pointing out the other day, Dalton and I were looking at something on some mapping software. I run an app, and I was showing him, if you go and look at the number of shipwrecks just in Mobile Bay, it's pretty epic. Now, of course, a lot of them are buried, and you know, only washed over or washed, you know, where you can see them from time to time. But we got a lot of, you think shipwrecks, I guess, you know, getting this idea, it's all the Caribbean. It's all somewhere there's a rocky coast, right? That's where you're going to get, these. But it's, we got a ton of them around here. And some of them, including this one, had silver, had booty in them, silver booty in them. Let's see the, yeah, somebody asked about that video. I'm going to try to get the video was sent to me. One of y'all on the text line sent me a link to that Facebook video. It was the story you're hearing about this creepazoid. It comes up to this lady with her kids in the parking lot over the weekend. And it's not the news report and what MPD is putting out is absolutely factual. You know, they're giving you the facts. But there's this other part of it I saw in the video that this car, well, not a car, it's a truck. It was the brother of the woman who was visually assaulted there by this creeper in the parking lot. And he shows up like you would. I mean, you get a call from your sister, you're going to show up. And he shows up and he starts videoing. And maybe there's some other reason for this, I don't know. But he's taking his phone, doing like a live Facebook thing, and shows that it's a four-door pickup truck. He shows the back of it, and the door handles in the back are gone. Okay, and there looks to be some sort of wedge in the between the window and the frame of the window and the frame of the truck, like to make it so it wouldn't go down. It was, and then there's a mask in the back and all. You know, it's just, it leaves me wondering. And I would watch this, maybe even get this guy on the show to talk more about that. The update here, this coming out here over the last probably hour or so, and this from MyNBC 15, WPMI, said a bill, like we've talked about this a bunch, a bill that would overhaul how Alabama regulates utilities and electricity rates has passed the state Senate, now moves on to the House for consideration. So what we talked about last week, that SB 360, y'all say it with me, the Power to the People Act, right, would expand the Alabama Public Service Commission from 3 members to 7 and change how commissioners are chosen. Instead of being elected statewide, commissioners would represent geographic districts tied to the state's congressional map once the transition is complete. Under the plan, the governor would appoint 4 new commissioners initially, with future members elected from districts in staggered elections starting in 2026 and continuing through 2030. Commissioners elected at that point would serve 6-year terms. The bill also creates a new Secretary of Energy position in the governor's cabinet. We talked about that. That governor would appoint the secretary, who, and this is this line right here. We talked about this several times. This is the part I need to see some details. Said the governor would appoint this Secretary of Energy who would, quote, oversee staff and administrative functions for the Public Service Commission and set meeting agendas for the commissioners. So, administrative functions and overseeing staff, that sounds like they're there just to help the Public Service Commission set the meetings, this and that. The sentence here, or the words it said, set meeting agendas for the commissioners. I'm just wondering how big of a control would this person from the executive branch, right? So the PSC, this separate thing, and people put on the PSC when we all do what we're supposed to do. By the way, more PSC candidates going to be on the show here in the next 2 weeks. We vote for them. They go up there. They do their thing. But this, it sounds somewhat innocuous, but the devil's always in those details, y'all. That you're like, okay, well, there could be energy czar for the governor's office, but the Secretary of Energy would oversee staff and administrative functions. That doesn't sound, well, okay. And set meeting agendas for the commissioners. Does that mean tell them they can only talk about these things at the meeting? That was one that worries me. There's, the first iteration of this and the second iteration of it, there are parts of this that are good, that are good, right? This is all, it's not like the whole thing is questionable. There's things you're going to say, yeah, all right. They got the provision in there that would block increases to basic electric rates till 2029. Then after that, utilities would be barred from including certain expenses. We talked about this. They couldn't include, you wouldn't be paying in your bill for lobbying, advertising costs, outside fundraising activities. So those are all good things. It is interesting, though, what's the actual job going to be of the, if this goes through, because it's got to go back through the House, and who knows what it'll do in the House here in the last parts of session. But if it does, and you have this energy czar working for the executive branch that's overseeing the Public Service Commission, are they going to be able to say, well, I'm not a member of the, I'm not a voting member, but we're not going to have a meeting on this. We're not going to have a meeting on that. So the bill would also require the commission to hold at least one public meeting each year to discuss issues affecting electric service, including reliability, infrastructure investments, and other industry trends. I don't know if that sounds like opening the books, though, right? But yeah, it's on to the House here, and then if it would pass, it would be up to the governor. So, coming right back. News is coming up next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
We're at 152, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good to check in with my buddy David McCrary, get the week started and talk about that inventory on the lot. Obviously, lots of vehicles. You and I even talked mid-size SUVs last week and pickups.
Yeah, we've got a lot of small and mid-size SUVs. We sold a Honda CR-V this morning. We've got two more on the ground, and I just bought another one about 10 minutes ago. So little Honda CR-Vs, those are great vehicles. I mean, they seem to last forever, and people are real happy with them. Good gas mileage as well. Trucks, I mean, we've got regular cabs, two-wheel drive, four-wheel drives. We've got two short wheelbase regular cab Rams. One's got the Hemi in it, and those are kind of hard to find. That one with the Hemi in it's kind of like a hot rod. But we've got crew cab, regular cab, whatever you want on trucks. So anything you need, we've got a good selection.
All right, let's talk about people checking out that selection in person and on the revamped awesome website.
Yeah, website, lcmmotorcars.com. Check it out on your desktop or your phone, and you can come see us in person. We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. We are the third red light on the left-hand side. You'll see us there, or you can just give us a call, 251-375-0068.
Thanks, David.
Have a good day, buddy.
All right, you too. David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. It's this popped up to today during the show as well. It's from Fox News. Fired DHS head Chrissy Noem. So remember that story. Faces criminal referral from congressional Democrats. So this is, says congressional Democrats are seeking criminal charges against Chrissy Noem weeks after President Trump ousted her from leadership at DHS. Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat out of Maryland, and Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat out of Illinois, the top Democrats in their respective chambers' judiciary committees, sent a letter to DOJ today accusing Noem of lying to Congress during back-to-back hearings earlier this month. So this letter that came out today said a number of her statements appear to violate criminal statutes prohibiting perjury and knowingly making false statements to Congress after months of evading our committee's request to testify in routine oversight hearings. Secretary Noem made a series of demonstrably false statements in a brazen attempt to undermine critical congressional oversight of the Department of Homeland Security, end quote. It's interesting. You wonder if this was coming and is why Trump, you know, shifted here and put Marquand Mullen in or suggested this. It moved her out. Actually, somebody else acting right now. It says top Democrats on the Senate and House Judiciary Committees charged that there were four categories of statements that Noem made during her testimony before respective panels where DHS chief could have perjured herself. Among those answers, the lawmakers scrutinized, and you remember, we saw some of this video, right? I remember playing up some of these clips from Twitter, said, among those answers the lawmakers scrutinized are whether DHS follows court orders, Corey Lewandowski's role in the DHS contracts, whether immigration enforcement has detained U.S. citizens, and most notably, the contracting process for a $220 million ad campaign heavily featuring Noem. Is that what they spend on that ad campaign? Wow. The ad campaign in particular was an explosive moment during Noem's hearing earlier this month when Senator John Kennedy, Republican out of Louisiana, you know, that guy has always the funny things to say, pressed her on whether there was a competitive bid process for the contracts and the substantial cash flow. Noem told the panel that she that the contract did go through a competitive process and, quote, career officials at the department chose who would do those advertising commercials, end quote. When asked if President Donald Trump knew about the ad campaign and its eye-popping sum, Noem said he did. That was a 220, my gosh, I didn't realize they spent that, $220 million ad campaign. Trump contradicted that statement in an interview with Reuters, and Kennedy argued that it was hard to believe the president would have given it a green light. He went on to say, it's something we have to defend. I'm on the Appropriations Committee. I mean, my research shows that you did not bid them out. So this is Republican, right, saying this. He alleged that the group had received most of the money, that a group had received most of the money, had direct ties to former DHS spokesperson Tricia McLaughlin and her husband Benjamin Yoho, who runs the company. Durbin and Raskin also wrote in that first letter we talked about, said even if Secretary Noem was the one telling the truth about the president's knowledge, and she may well have been, she flatly misrepresented the contract that had been subject to a competitive bid, end quote. Making false statements to Congress is classified as a felony, and a guilty verdict carries up to 5 years in prison and a maximum fine of $250,000. And as like we all like to point out, Congress can lie to you, and there's no charge, but you cannot lie to Congress without facing a felony charge here. So this is, and you got to wonder if this was not the reason to just switch horses in this race, to have Noem out with this coming. I don't know. It seems like even when Republican Kennedy is coming after her, these are things, I don't care where your politics are, and if you can support the president's plan on immigration, but if they're spending $220 million on an ad campaign for just being the, like, yay DHS or something, wow. Jim in Georgetown, the real question is, who didn't know that the Democrats are going to go after Trump and every member of his cabinet? Yeah, but this one, like, if there's not a better excuse for why, did it go through a competitive bid or not? You know, do they? And sometimes you see this in government, they'll make an RFP and they'll say, yeah, we put an RFP out. But there's only like one company that fits the RFP. Yep. Might be bad times right there. All right, Paul Feinbaum on the way next. We'll do it again tomorrow, St. Patrick's Day edition of Midday Mobile.